Hey, everybody. David here. Just want to drop in real quick and give you a heads up that for our recording today, John and I, we had to change our recording platform at the last minute. So the audio quality is going to be a little different. The editing is going to be a little different. It's going to be less polished than we normally put out. So apologies for that, but we wanted to get this recorded and out as soon as possible. Also, the three of us, we all had very long and busy days. So we're a little bit punchier than we may normally be, but it sort of adds to the fun of the recording. So just to set a little bit of expectations and ask for your understanding in terms of our usual production qualities. Okay, enough said. Let's jump into the episode. Welcome to the Lorehounds. We're your guides to the underbelly of the Empire. I'm David, and this is our coverage of episodes 1 and 2 for the new Star Wars animated feature, Maul Shadow Lord. With me today are my fellow host, John, and our fellow co-host, Jean. And due to some technical issues and some other things, we are not recording on our normal technology platform. So the audio and some of the other things might not be as smooth as they are on normal circumstances. So forgive any audio quality issues, but we're here. We made it. We aligned 3 schedules in the galaxy to be in one place at one time. And that is, let me tell you, in this day and age, it's saying something. Jean, how you doing?
I'm good.
Okay. He survived the day.
It was me. It was me. It was all me.
It's all right.
But I'm good. Thank you.
Cool. John, how are you?
I will get my vengeance for this misstep, John.
Very funny. So we are coming in hot with full spoilers. Everything Star Wars is on the table. However, we're going to break up our conversations about episodes 1 and 2 a little bit. Although with episode 2, I don't know if it matters all that much in terms of spoilers, but we're going to at least break up the conversation. We'll have a commercial break in between the 2 episodes. We also have got a comm link from Alicia. We've got her hot takes and a lore bomb for us to consider.
I'm excited. More excited for the podcast than I was for the episode.
All right. Can you... save it, John. You got some dialogue here, John, in the outline. We're keeping all this in because I'm not editing this thing because it's a different... did he freeze too? Come on, Zoom. Seriously? This is not...
Did he freeze?
Yeah, he froze. Bloody hell. You froze, John.
Yeah. What did you ask me? Because I didn't even hear.
You have a section in the outline, in the intro.
If you want to get into contact with us, send an email to starwars@thelorehounds.com, or you can head to our Discord server where we have channels for the Maul Dark Lord show, Shadow Lord. Oh my God, I'm never going to get the title of the show right. And all other things Star Wars and nerdy. You can find links to everything in the show notes, in the link tree. And don't forget that we're independent podcasters and we'd love your support via Patreon or Supercast if you have the dollars to spare. Also linked in the show notes, by the way.
If you're new here, we cover Star Wars pretty regularly, but we always like to give a little bit of context because Star Wars fans can get a little frisky about the lore and such. And so we just want to set some expectations. I'm a pretty casual fan, child of 77, into the movies, into some of the television shows, no books or comics. John, you are pretty well versed with the lore. You've got a good timeline in your head, I think, and you've read a bunch of the books.
Yeah, I feel like Rey in The Force Awakens when Kylo Ren, which is Alicia to me, says, "You need a teacher." You know, I got some raw potential in the Star Wars universe, but I'm certainly no timeline aficionado like
you're a little old to become a Padawan. So
that's right. I am too old to become a Padawan. But, you know, it's debatable now that, you know, we're in the Imperial era. What is a Padawan in this era? I think we're going to explore that question a lot in this show.
Good question. Jean, I don't think I've ever asked you where you are with your Star Wars. I mean, I know you're a comic book guy and certainly an MCU, DCU expert, master. But where are you with your Star Wars lore?
I mean, to keep it going with John's example, I'm probably like the Finn of this group. I'm very force sensitive.
Okay.
they're trying to take it away from me, but I'm force sensitive. Yes, I am.
Yeah.
But I watched, you know, all the movies, all the TV shows. I've read some of the comics, not all of them. I really haven't delved into the books. But yeah, I'm pretty well-versed in most things Star Wars-y.
That's good. Okay. And then Alicia, who's not with us tonight, is sort of our lore master of note with Star Wars. She really has a full handle on it and deep into all of the different races and lore, force history and all that kind of stuff. And she's going to be sending in regular updates on these podcasts as we go forward, including sort of key lore bits of anything that we see on screen to help us contextualize it a little bit. So we've got a lot of Star Wars experience within our community, but we're not a Star Wars specific or Star Wars only show. And I'm just saying this for anyone new who's finding us. We cover a lot of shows. We cover everything from The Pit to Rings of Power, House of the Dragon to Ted Lasso. So, you know, we're really into story and we're really into lore and diving into lore, but we're, as a collective, we're not a single focus topic. So,
No, actually, I think you should hold us to extreme accountability with this Star Wars lore. And if you have a single quibble with anything we had to say, I think you should leave us a 1-star review.
and call us out for being too woke and spoiling all in far too much, right? So, that said, we have covered a lot of Star Wars, Andor, the Acolyte, Skeleton Crew, Mandalorian, Ahsoka. We've covered Bad Batch. We have a stalled Star Wars movie project, John and I. Where are we up to? We got up to 77. We didn't get to Empire Strikes Back.
We did Empire Strikes Back.
We did? Okay, got it.
We sure did. We were going to cover Spaceballs next, actually. and then that,
we'll get life. There.
But yeah, no, I mean, look, it's a fun thing to do once in a while.
And we'll finish off
Jedi soon.
Eventually. And then, of course, we have Mando and Grogu coming up and Ahsoka later this year. And so let's just really quick, before we get into our hot takes, I think we all have some different opinions about Star Wars animated. I had a hard time with a lot of the earlier animated shows. Bad Batch is my favorite so far. I haven't finished Clone Wars nor Rebels, but John, you have some opinions about, I believe, Rebels, right?
I mean, I love both Clone Wars and Rebels. Maul is a part of both of them, and he is a really interesting character in them in a way that surprised me. You know, I don't want to go deep into the Maul stuff yet, but I was very excited for the show because I really liked him in Clone Wars and Rebels.
Right.
And I've done some reading on some of the books too, but nothing involving Maul, I don't think.
And Rebels, you've been on record saying that Rebels is, the highs of Rebels are very high.
Oh yeah. I actually think the highs of Clone Wars are some of the highest of Star Wars. The Rebels is more consistently good than Clone Wars.
Gotcha. Right. So, and Clone Wars is a little bit swingier.
Clone Wars has some real gimmicky stuff in it, but when it hits, it really does its thing.
Right. Jean, I'm not sure where you are with the animated. I know you've heard me complain about the overuse of rehashing of 77 sound effects.
Nobody cares. You're the only one.
Send me back to bed. Because my fist is getting tired because I'm shaking it at the sky. Jean, what's your take on just the animated world in general?
Yeah, I think Rebels might be my fave. And I only say that now because I just finished watching it with E, my 9-year-old, soon to be 10. And he absolutely loved the series. And I think watching it with him gave me further appreciation for it. Before that, I just love, you know, Clone Wars, because I love the Anakin story. And I think it was really well done to flesh it out the way that they did. So I really... those are my two favorite. And Rebels surpasses Clone Wars only because I see the wonder that E sees when he watches that particular show.
Cool. That's cool. I like that. You saw Bad Batch, didn't you, Jean?
Oh, yeah. I've watched everything.
Yeah. Where are you with Bad Batch? Because I think in terms of tone, Bad Batch and this new Maul show seem the closest together.
I have to think about that.
Okay.
But I thought Bad Batch was... Yeah, let's talk about that.
Okay. So let's get into...
I don't know about that. I don't know. I'm just going to quibble. I think the last season of Clone Wars, the one that was made by Disney after the revival, is the closest in tone to this. It's got a darkness to it, but it's not without... it's a little bit lighter, but it is like... spoilers for something that's 15 years old, but it is the final story of everything falling to shit.
right.
Well, see, I was just laying a trap for the Star Wars heads out there so that they could at me and we would get a little engagement on that.
Well, we're just having differing opinions here. I mean, also, David, I don't think you've watched the Tales of the Underworld, Tales of the Empire stuff, which has a little bit more of that darkness inherent in it.
Got it.
And those are really good too.
Yeah.
And those are really
one good of them too. I haven't seen. I don't remember which one, but the most recent one, I have to go back and watch it. So
yeah. I'm blanking on the one with Asajj, which was really good.
I watched that one. That was a really good one.
That was really good.
Alicia's favorite.
Right. Well, let's get into our, now that we're here, let's actually take it a step further and talk about our hot takes for episode one. We've got a voicemail from Alicia. So let me play that real quick.
Hello, Alicia here, checking in by comlink for this week's Lore Bomb. Hey, and look at that. I found a functional mic cable. sorry about the sound
this
again.
This mall is plaguing
preview episode, although I hope you check that out because I'm going to avoid repeating any of that here. Just my thoughts on the show in general so far. I think it's off to a fantastic start. The techno-noir vibes are immaculate. There's some incredible action cinematography and great character work. I like how they started by setting Devin on the brink of falling before she even met Maul, but making it completely understandable why she would be in that place. There's so much badassery, even from Ego Diodaki, who I was joking in the chat was turning his Padawan over to the police like he was Sam Wilson's Captain America portraying Isaiah. That one's for Jean. And yeah, I love Spybot. I want Spybot to be my droid companion. Just to mention, I talked about the new comic that's linked to the show. The first issue was released beginning of March. I mentioned a bit about that in our preview episode. The next issue comes out April 8th. So I will let you know in my comlink message next week if there's any essential lore for the show, other than apparently I mentioned that there was a crime lord named Bemis. Well, he showed up here, but he sure didn't last long here, did he? So I guess he will last through the comic, though.
All right. She's got a second part of that same message, which is going to be a bit of a lore that will play a little bit later. Jean, why don't you pick it up and give us your hot takes for episode one?
This is just beautiful to watch. Much like Alicia just said, just the whole vibe, the neo-wars, like really cool. This underbelly in the Star Wars universe, which is something that, I really appreciate bringing forth to screen. And I think it just looks great. The one thing that I really, really loved in this first was the chase scenes. Just like, it almost felt like I'm watching a big screen movie car chase, right? And it, a whole different, not a speeder, not, a race, nothing like that. Just a good old fashioned car chase. And that was so fun to watch. And I, really appreciated seeing Maul in this place where he's consumed with really, vengeance. Like this is what he wants. This is, I'm going to take the next step to get what I want to get. And what I want to get is ultimately to defeat Sidious.
Right. Just get a Sidious drop.
Man has never gotten over getting his ass kicked by an old man.
Never, never, never. And I could appreciate that. You know what I'm saying? I could appreciate, you know, holding on to that grudge. I get it. So yeah, I just really, I'm ready to dig into seeing how he eventually can turn her around.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was done grinding.
Well, I'm going to have you put a pin in it because we're going to talk about more later. And these are just
all right. Okay. Top line. Okay. All right. So those are my thoughts.
Right.
It's a beautiful show to watch. And the one thing that really stood out for me that made me like really happy was watching the car chases.
Cool.
It was just tremendous.
John, you put a comment in our Discord chat that made me think that your account had been hacked. So, I'm curious. Oh my. You had a different take on the episode. So you want to clue us in on how you're feeling about the show?
I was honestly nervous to podcast about it, not because I hated it, but because I was so lukewarm about it. And I think that's the most boring take to have on a podcast. Like if I hated that, that might be entertaining.
Right. We get some more.
But I was like, it was fine. It was fine. The visuals, absolutely exquisite, may I say. Like they have been working on the same animation style with sort of a departure with Rebels, but from Clone Wars through the Bad Batch and all these tales of blah, blah, blah series. And they're really just, by the end of the Bad Batch, I was like, I can't imagine this getting any better. And it's better. It's better now. It looks great. They have these incredibly detailed backgrounds. They have this really distinct animation style that just says Star Wars, where it's like, you know, slightly bigger head with angular features with the detailed skin on top of it for the character. And it just tells you, this is the character. We know that this is, you know, not a realistic person, but this is the stylized version of Star Wars. And I'm totally with it. It feels confident in its execution. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's good about it. The story is the weakest point of it. And you know that I come to shows for the story. I don't come for just the visuals. And
or just the
maybe
lore.
That's a me problem with Star Wars, because Star Wars has inherently been a visual, a visual feast from the beginning. The first Star Wars movie is quite a simple story too. I don't know. I think I just need to see the show develop a little bit more. I think I would like it better as a binge, which I almost never say, but the amount of story we got in this episode was basically just Maul would like revenge. Jedi Padawan may be bad. That's it.
Yes.
That's it.
Right.
That's the whole story.
Give me more. I want more.
And I was a little disappointed that they didn't do more in these two episodes.
Okay.
Now it's a lot of setup. It was only 40 minutes of screen time total.
Right.
I'm not going to judge the whole show on it. I'm just saying that for these two episodes, they did not hook me in a way that a lot of other shows have hooked me with the Gambit.
Got it. Okay. I don't think I have much more to add from a hot take standpoint. The animation, is great. Even the camera moves are very cinematic, like a sort of a crane shot, the way we drop down on our protagonists, onto the street before the little shoplifting scene. Like that was a very cinematic move. It was really great. Pretty standard noir crime plot. I think if you like detective mysteries and crime syndicate stuff, then you can watch this. And then the Star Wars stuff is just kind of there for fun. But if you like Star Wars and are interested in expanded world building, that's a bit tangential to the traditional main storylines, then I think this show is also for you. So I think they're doing a good job in creating a cool storytelling space. And yeah, the storylines are a little tropey, but that's fine because it's beautiful to look at. And it's a cool ass character and some cool ass fighting. And like, I'm happy. I'm Saturday morning. I'm chewing down my cereal pretty happily. So, but in the best way, like this is high quality cereal. This isn't like cheap sugar cereal. So I'm pretty excited. All right. Any other thoughts before we take a quick break? Otherwise, when we come back, we can get into talking about episode one full on.
I'm ready to dive in.
Okay. Here we go. And we're back. So thank you, Wikipedia, for giving us a nice little synopsis to read out. Chapter one, The Dark Revenge. At the end of the Clone Wars and the rise of the Galactic Empire, former Sith Lord Maul and his lieutenant Rook Cast lead the Shadow Collective in robbing a bank on Jenks to spark conflict between crime lords Nicodemus and Luti Vario, who betrayed him in the past. After killing several police officers, Maul draws the attention of the Tactical Defense Force, Captain Brander Lawson. Meanwhile, a fugitive Jedi Padawan Devon Izara and her master Ikidiodaki, if I said that right, survive as beggars. Izara is arrested after shoplifting, and Larson tries to get Izara to cooperate with him, but she refuses. Maul sabotages talks between Demas and Vario and sends a team to kill Vario, but Lawson intervenes and arrests him for Demas's death. Maul later attacks the police precinct, defeats the police officer droids, and confronts Vario, who persuades him to spare his life by offering to help against the Pike Syndicate leader, Marg Krim. Maul also becomes interested in Devon. So let's just do a quick run around talking about the plot and the characters. And we'll start off with Lawson and Two Boots. Jean, how are you feeling about Lawson and Wagner Moura, who is voicing this character?
Yeah, I never thought about, policing in the Empire. Mm. I never thought about, having a police force in the Empire, because I always assumed that the troopers were the de facto police force, right?
Gotcha.
Well, what about Andor, though? Andor, we had the whole corporate police force, very similar.
Oh, you mean the corporation? Yeah.
But that's the analog that I saw.
Mm. You're right. Okay, it's fair. That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
But we didn't really think of them as police. We saw them more as corporate security, even though they were doing law enforcement.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
Because police are what? Civil servants, right?
Exactly.
Well, so, I'm not sure if I want to opine on the structures of this police force in the galaxy, but maybe.
But that's what it made me think about was, policing in the galaxy and these, other locales that we haven't visited, where the Empire's presence may not be felt as harshly as the locales that we have visited on screen multiple times. Mm-hmm. So it was really interesting to see how, there is an active policing, unit that is charged with crime keeping. Like, we want to stop crime. Like, what are we doing here? Like, it really took me aback for a minute, like, to think about that and what it means for Star Wars and what it means for this series, and that there's a, not some sort of, marshal or, some sort of, but an actual police force that is, given the mandate to stop criminals. And that is fascinating to me. So I really thought that I want to explore more of Lawson and his backstory and how he became what he is currently. Was he always a officer? Was he placed into this role post, Sidious coming to power? Like, what's going on? So those were my initial thoughts upon, meeting Lawson.
Right. I got a lot of Blade Runner-y kind of vibes from this police force as well. And I think they're definitely going for some homages from earlier science fiction works. And I think they're on record of even saying some of that. John, did you have any opinions about Lawson or Two Boots?
you know, the Andy Griffith School of Policing taught these guys a number. I do appreciate, you know, they seem to at least want to do the right thing.
Right.
We need to have at least some kind of a baseline morality in the show, or it's going to get really old just watching the bad guys be bad and worse than each other. Right. Especially, you know, this is ostensibly a kid's show, too. We want some kind of lightness in it. Yeah, I, you know, obviously there's something going on here where he won't send away his son.
John, did you freeze again?
I think so.
Yep. Freeze. 4109. We'll just hope that he comes back.
His back channels too.
You're back. You froze. You were gone.
Oh.
And the way his son.
It might be in the, I don't know. It's going to be in the audio. So
what did you hear me say last?
You were talking about sending away his son.
So he's not sending away his son, and I don't know if I agree with him that it's safer to not send away his son when his workplace is getting bombed. But you know, there's something going on with that. There's some reason he doesn't want to send away his son. Perhaps there's a secret there that has to do with the mother, but. Overall, I think
episode 2, I guess, you know, it's really hard to maintain the.
I don't know how I'm going to talk about this without referencing him in episode 2, right? Especially if we're going to talk about what we think of characters overall.
Yeah. So let's do this. Sorry, dear listener, if you thought we were going to separate the two episodes, we're going to change that up. It's 30 and 24 minutes. So apologies. We have a awkward recording situation that we're dealing with tonight as well. And so we're just going to open it up and let's just go for it across the board. So,
Sounds good.
Apologies for the midstream change, but hey, y'all are big people. You can handle it. Carry on, John, please.
Yeah, I just had one other thing to say is obviously we know from the second episode, he's got his back channels too. He might have a moral intent, but we will see if he's able to live up to that intent throughout the season. Mm.
That is Rena Sewell. And we don't know yet much about her, at least I didn't.
Well, we know she's free for dinner.
That is true. And she's interested in him. They toast to Catalor. And so that's some sort of shared job or event or history that they have between them. I had a question. Is he divorced?
This is a split custody situation.
Yeah, right. And that's an interesting thing in the Star Wars, sort of depicting a modern family style sort of situation.
That's true. I don't recall any other time we've seen that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought divorce. I thought she was dead.
Oh, maybe he's hiding that she's dead. Oh, can I go see mom?
It's really dark.
Not unless you piss me off enough.
That's pretty dark.
This is a dark show. I'm going to make a dark joke.
Fair enough.
My bad. Sorry.
Apparently, even the homages even extend to the movie Heat, where Larson is doing the initial investigation of the bank heist, and they're doing this sort of situational or tactical analysis of how things went down. And I was like, in my mind, I was like, I made a note. I was like, yo, this is Heat. This is Al Pacino showing up on the scene of the crime. Mm-hmm. And then Alicia posted in the Discord a link to an article or something where the showrunners actually said, yeah, we're referencing a whole bunch of stuff in this episode. And that this is, you know, Heat. The Heat scene is definitely an inspiration for part of this. So I thought that was kind of cool. And it sort of connects in with the criminess of this all, right? You know, it's going to harken back to, you know, Goodfellas and other mob shows and Heat and stuff like that. So that's a lot of fun.
So at what point does Maul walk into a room and go, ah, shit.
Right. Actually swears on screen.
No, I'm just being, you know, I'm referencing Goodfellas.
Oh, okay. Yes. Which line was
Joe
that?
Joe Pesci seen in Goodfellas. I'm not gonna spoil anything else.
All right.
Yes, it's an
iconic line.
Don't do it.
It's only a 50-year-old movie, everybody. Yeah, at me.
Well, we're feisty. We're pugnacious tonight. We're pugnacious tonight.
It's the Zoom effect.
Yes, it is. Exactly. We're like,
it's triggering all of us from COVID.
That's right. That is absolutely right. Richard Ayoade is the voice of Two Boots. And if folks know the television show The IT Crowd, he was one of the main characters in that. And so I was listening to his voice and I was like, God, who is this? And I'm just looking it up now, and that's who he is. It's interesting that this police droid is, he looks like all the other police droids, but he is somehow different. He's got some other programming. So I don't know. Jean,
he's out of control.
Hmm?
I got vibe, what's that Danny Glover and that horrible man's movie? It was Danny Glover and somebody, and
Gibson?
I refuse to name it. Yes, him. What is the name of that movie? Of their movie?
Lethal
Weapon. I forgot the name of their movie. Yes. That's the vibes that I got. Like,
okay.
Norton is the straight-laced cop. And Two Boots is like, yeah, yippee-ki-yo, let's go.
Really?
You know what I mean?
He is pretty yippee-ki-yo.
Because saying that they should call in the Empire, like by protocol.
So. No, but he was the one who was, he jumped into the ride and was like, yo, let's go get them.
Okay.
Get out of here. You know what I mean? He was like making no qualms. He was trying to do anything. He went right into the chase. Whereas Lawson was kind of a little bit more reserved about everything.
Right.
I think he's way more okay with collateral damage. I think you're right, Jean.
Yeah. So that's the vibe that I got from the two of them on screen together.
Right.
This is why you listen to Mando and you don't trust droids.
A couple of things that struck me too about Lawson, he was drinking coffee, like, oh, that's a very cop thing sort of to do, right? So I don't wonder if we're going to get a Kobayashi, what was that, Usual Suspects reference in here or not, but you know, he's drinking coffee everywhere he goes, which I thought was sort of funny. And then he's got a shoulder holster for his pistol. I'm like, that code's very detective, right? So they're really leading into that.
But Danny Glover had a shoulder holster and he's a weapon. Yeah,
exactly. So the one thing that I really loved about the introduction of Lawson and then the introduction of the show is the scene where they get the hologram up from one of the droids and Lawson and Maul are face to face. And there's that great scene where he's just getting up close to him and we get them both on screen. And I thought, well, this is just good basic storytelling, putting the police protagonist, you know, in view, you know, give him a view of the bad guy of his quarry, of his pursuit, and then put them in relationship to each other very early on in the story. And start setting some stakes and start setting the tension between them that's going to build over time. So it's pretty standard police story stuff, but I was like, oh, I like it. They're paying attention to the form, right? They're paying attention to the way that these stories work.
Can I ask if either of you wondered why he didn't kill him?
You mean when in episode two?
He knocks him out.
That's a good question.
Instead of killing him.
Yeah. Because he killed pretty much everybody else, right? He has no hesitation.
Yes.
Maybe. Okay, so I'm just making this up. Because they've been watching the cops watch them and the other bad guys. Maybe he sees them as useful tools. If he kills him now, if he kills the main captain, that is going to draw a lot of attention. I mean, they've drawn enough attention as it is by busting into the police station. So that's, you know, forget about it, right? You're gonna pull in a lot more resources and a lot more attention. So maybe he's keeping him alive because he sees him as some sort of useful tool or as a way to confound the plot and the situation with the other bad guys and creating opportunities. Like they created an opportunity to get away. They were being surrounded and he was like, well, you're a cop. I'm going to shoot this bridge out and you have to either choose between saving all those innocent civilians or capturing me. And so I think he sees him as a useful, I don't want to say useful idiot in that regard, but like as a potential useful tool to cause, little disturbances in the plot.
Yeah. That's interesting. You're right that Maul is keeping about as low a profile as a lifted pickup truck. But yeah, I think Maul, you said useful idiots.
Right.
I think that's right because that's how Maul sees everybody in the galaxy.
That's a good point.
That's a point.
He's got a massive ego, and I don't think he thinks anyone is smarter than him.
Mm-hmm. And so if he can see, but he's not opposed, if he sees a value in you, he will keep you around. Just like he kept, was it Luti Vario? Who did he keep? Vario? Or he kept Vario.
Yeah, he kept Vario around.
Right.
We saw him try to approach Ahsoka and recruit her in Clone Wars.
Right.
We see him in Rebels try to recruit Ezra. Like, he is looking for tools everywhere. But again, I don't think he sees them as equals at any point. I think he sees them as useful idiots.
Right.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about Devon Izara and Ikido Diodaki. Ikido Diodaki? Sorry, I'll get that eventually by the end of the season. The voice of Ikido Diodaki is played by Dennis Haysbert, which is interesting because he was also in Heat. He was the getaway driver that they recruit at the last minute. Oh, sorry, spoilers again. Darn it, we're just going to get all kinds of hate mail. So be it. Devon Izara is being voiced by Gideon Adlon. Jean, any initial thoughts on Izara and Ikido Diodaki?
Yeah, Diodaki, man. This is part of the reason why I can't stand Jedi. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes. Please, sir, feed me more boot to look.
You know, this is part of the reason I can't stand the Jedi. I mean, yeah, just come on, bro. Come on. Do better. Do better for yourself, but for the person that you know, ostensibly you're saying you're going to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
Do better by them. You know what I mean? And just to watch him play the shadows just irked me. Really pissed me off. Just pissed me off.
John, were you as pissed off as Jean?
No, I totally support people complying with the fascist state to get what they want. That's always a good idea. Is this a fascist state? Questionable, because they're not quite under the Empire, but they're certainly under the Empire's mega jurisdiction, right? They have to call in the Empire if they see certain things.
Right.
Yeah. No. Definitely always goes well to comply with the fascist state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're trying to avoid the attention of the Empire and the autonomy. So, it's hard to say much about Devon Izara at this point. Just that she is, how far along is she in her force training? How far along as a Padawan is she? I mean, she's with a master now, right? So she's not a youngling. But it doesn't seem like she uses a lot of her force powers until the end of episode 2, right? But then Maul certainly feels her presence. So, Jean, any thoughts on Izara?
Not yet. I'm trying to figure... Because the thing is, I'm watching her, but I'm really watching Diodaki. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have a sense for her yet.
Gotcha.
For them yet. I don't have a sense for them yet. Her. So I'm not really sure.
John,
where I stand with them.
Gotcha. John, you've had some famous opinions about the recruitment of children into the Jedi.
Oh, yeah. I forgot I had those opinions. Those are good opinions. Yeah, I mean, all these children.
Nope, you're breaking up again a little bit, John. Oh, sorry, everybody. We got another little freeze. You were breaking up, John.
Okay, I'm going to try to say the last couple sentences. So clearly this is not a youngling who would have been spared from a lot of the horrors of the Clone Wars. This is a Padawan who was probably on the front lines with this master, especially a master was probably leading armies. You know, the Jedi were the generals of these wars, and she was probably seeing everything. So it's very concerning that now, you know, she had to go through all this trauma, and now she's forced to be a beggar. And I, too, would not really feel like that was justice if I were in her position.
And she is, you know, they're wet, they're cold, they're tired, they're living in the margins, in the shadows, living rough. And they have powers. And Iko Diodaki is like, no, we can't. I get the idea that you don't want to attract attention to yourself, but at the same time, you know, what good are you doing or anybody else by being this hidden? You know what I'm saying? I don't know, Jean, thoughts?
Yes. No, I totally agree. What good are you doing to for her, for the universe at large, for the galaxy at large? What good are you at this point?
Mm-hmm.
As far as I can tell, none. Zero. Zilch. You're bringing nothing to the table, but like really troubling to watch him, you know, just lay back and see her get taken and see
how they were living.
Yeah, basically gave up, you know, see how they're living and then to be like, okay, yeah, she can get arrested, whatever.
Right. I mean, come on. I had mixed feelings before the arrest because, you know, on the one hand, yeah, I think they should be, you know, trying to find another Jedi, figure out what's going on. They're some of the most powerful people as far as like power levels in the universe, but they are also survivors of a genocide, right? And there's quite a lot of trauma. And I would understand wanting to lay low for a little while and figure out the new layout before wanting to take action. And maybe he feels like, you know, being beggars on the street is one of the ways to become invisible. A lot of people, you know, we know from the real world that people shy away from people who are asking for money on the street, right? A lot of people don't want to make eye contact. A lot of people want to ignore them. And as much as it might, you know, for someone like Izara, who's still learning, it might feel really, you know, below her, beneath her. I don't know if I totally disagree with Diodaki's caution. Another thing is, when people see you as invisible, they often say things that you wouldn't hear otherwise, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're not a person to them. And they'll have conversations about what's going on in the Empire that you might not have found out about. So, I don't know. I had mixed feelings before the arrest. After the arrest, he can kick rocks, as you know, would say.
Fair enough. Let's talk a little bit about Maul, Rookcast, and the Shadow Collective, but we've got a lore bomb from Alicia.
Whoa. Everyone into the shelter.
Yeah, because it's not short. And she's going to clue us in on some important facts. I have not listened to all of this yet, so let's see how this goes, given our weird recording circumstances.
The topic of today's comlink message is Dathomirian Zabrax, aka Night Brothers, aka those dudes who look like Maul. And I don't mean, of course, the ones in the helmets, who are, of course, Mandalorians. We already talked about the Death Watch a bit in the preview episode, but they are the Mandalorian extremists whom Maul took over when he killed their leader during the Clone Wars. So this is just your casual reminder that the Darksaber is currently somewhere in Maul's possession. So it makes sense that there are Mandalorians following Maul. But it is interesting to note that Maul's number two, for now at least, Rookcast, she takes her helmet off while the others seem to be leaving it on so far. This is clearly a period of transition for the Death Watch group. I talked about how Bo-Katan left when Maul took them over. So this is why Bo-Katan thought never taking your helmet off was some weirdo neoconservative movement and kind of laughed at Din Djarin about it in the Mandalorian TV show. But we know by the time of that show, which is set 26 years after this, by then, the Death Watch are never supposed to remove their helmets. So you can kind of think of them as like born again Mandalorians, going back to some of the strictest rules on record, much stricter than prior generations. So it will be interesting to see where in that transition to that they are in this show now. Rook Cass, though, she is more from Bo-Katan's generation. And by the way, she was last seen being arrested by the Jedi and Republic forces at the end of the Clone Wars as Maul abandoned them to try to escape himself. We don't know why she's free. Maybe she got free during the chaos of Order 66, or maybe Maul returned the favor for that time that she broke him out of jail before that. And if that's the case, that would explain why she's still loyal to him. But anyway, that's the Mandalorians. About the horny guys, here is the canon lore, which has a couple more layers than the prior Legends lore. So bear with me a sec, but I'm pulling on this lore is basically mostly laid out in the Clone Wars, also in books and comics about Maul and Ventress and other Dathomirians, and also, of course, canon lore and reference books. And what it comes down to is there are two types of Zabraks. Now, when you hear Zabrak, you think the horns mostly. We'll get back to that. And the Zabraks are originally from the planet Iridonia, which is also true in Legends. But in canon lore, some criminal exiles settled on Dathomir. And we're still waiting to learn more about the origins of the Dathomirian Night Sister witches. We've seen some connections drawn in, for example, the game Jedi Fallen Order, and especially Ahsoka Season 1, which is set later in the timeline. These kind of tease us that maybe the Night Sisters, the witches, might even trace their roots and their magic to another galaxy. We're still waiting to learn more about that, but in any case, their interbreeding with the Zabraks is one of the two things that changed these Zabraks that settled on Dathomir versus the Iridonian counterparts from their original planet. And the other thing that changed them is the planet of Dathomir itself. So what this means, these two forces have changed together, is Dathomirian Zabraks. They have slightly different coloring than the Iridonian counterparts. For example, yeah, they just they have darker, more brightly pigmented skin, typically in the deep reds and yellows we see in the Knight Brothers in this show. The black marks that they have are actually ceremonial tattoos that they get when they reach a certain rite of passage. They're sort of mystically applied. Think, for example, of Morgan Elsbeth getting her markings in Season 1 of Ahsoka. And again, the Dathomirian Zabraks distinguish themselves from their Iridonian counterparts by having darker and more elaborate tattoos, much more dramatic, of course. But the biggest difference between the two planets is that female Iridonian Zabraks, they have horns as well, like the men. Think about, for example, Mother Coral from The Acolyte. But the Night Sisters of Dathomir do not. So it seems to be a stronger sexual dimorphism between the, you know, Zabraks who have intermingled with the Night Sisters versus the original Zabraks. And then Dathomirians are also separated by gender when they are young and they are raised and trained apart. This is definitely a matriarchal planet and a very harsh one where the Night Sisters rule with an iron fist. And most recently, Maul's own biological mother, Talzin, was the prime leader of them all. But both Night Brothers and Night Sisters go through tough and brutal training. Night Brothers are trained more on the physical side. They're a warrior society. They are taught to respect power and strength above all else. And they do have a higher than average tolerance for pain. But they also, they have honor. That's an important part of their culture. And they do have some highly valued artisans like master calligraphers. So they're not, you know, mindless brutes. And of course, being raised on Dathomir and intermarrying with Night Sisters has given some, like Maul, more connection to especially the dark side of the Force. But most don't wield lightsabers. Maul has, again, he's been trained as a Sith. He's not a Sith anymore, but he's still a dark side user. It's like, you know, he's left the church, but he's actually still mostly practicing the preachings. We see him using Sith tactics, and, you know, he seems to be always looking for number two, an acolyte. but he does not have the same magic that, say, Ventress or especially Mother Talzin do, because the Night Brothers were forbidden from learning magic with a K. But a lot of them at least picked up enhanced perception and reflexes from the Ichor of Dathomir. Now, why do we see Night Brother survivors with Maul when I said that there was a huge massacre in Dathomir? Well, that's because the Night Brothers were never the focus of Dooku and company's attacks. So more of them survived. Definitely many of them did fall in battle, but more of them did survive. Think anyone who's played Fallen Order, you go to Dathomir in that game, and during that game, you are mostly fighting living Night Brothers and zombie Night Sisters, because they're the ones who were wiped out in those attacks. And that game is, by the way, set about 4 years after this show. So we see Maul with two Night Brothers now, who are apparently literally each other's brothers, and they are named Icarus and Scorn. Icarus is the one who masks his face, which, according to the Star Wars databank, I quote, conceals his unbridled glee while wielding a heavy rotator blaster cannon in battle. In close combat, he has also been known to use a machete rather expertly. His brother Scorn, who's the bigger orange one, likes throwing knives and blasters instead. So later, Maul calls himself the last survivor of his civilization, which isn't even true then, but it does likely mean that he loses all the Dathomirians he personally knows. So I don't like the odds of Icarus and Scorn surviving this show, but I hope we see some cool stuff from them before they go. Okay, that's all for now. Can't wait to hear your guys' thoughts. Until next week, Ventress Watch continues.
Wow.
I think that does it.
Yeah, that's
see all of them next week. Yeah,
pretty comprehensive. John, any reflections or any thoughts? Thank you, Alicia, by the way, for sending that in. That was like really clear, and I heard them talk about Zabrax, and I don't know much about the Dathomiri background, so that was super great, John.
Yeah, that was awesome as always. Maul is such a he's not a complex guy, which is why I find him so fascinating, because he does so many things. He's such a bad guy. And to know that he comes from, you know, a lineage where we had just talked about, like, he thinks he's better than everyone else. Well, his mom was the leader.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, this is somebody who has always felt privileged. He was chosen by Sidious, right? Discarded. He is the son of the leader of his peoples. And he's running around like a spoiled brat, saying, everybody, look at me, look at me, look at me. Right.
So you're on record calling him a Nepo baby.
Yes. Yes. Right. Yes. I'm in. I am. Absolutely. Maul is, you know, he, for all the bravado and all of the things that we, at least that I associated with him, listening to what Alicia just said and thinking about what I have seen from him. He's a brat who's always been chosen, who's always had privilege.
Right.
And now he has none, and he wants his revenge on the people who took his privilege away.
Mm. That's a pretty good take, John.
I like it. I think that combined with his, as Alicia kind of alluded to, his sort of Sith Protestantism is a good summation of his standing right now in the universe, right? You're right, John. He is a nippo baby who got his toys taken away. And
he's lashing out.
He's lashing out. I don't think he needed his toys away to lash out. He did join the Sith before the destruction of a civilization.
That's true.
But yeah, no, he's continuing to lash out. That's for sure. And I really liked, I just want to say on Alicia's whole bit, like, you know, it was really long, but it was so thorough and varied that it didn't feel long. So mm-hmm. Thank you, Alicia. That was very well done.
Cool. Well, I think we should keep it simple tonight, given all that we've gone through just even to get here. And I think we've covered most of the main characters. Jean, anything else you want to wrap up with? Any other
insights? Yeah, just one little point.
Yeah.
One little point that I really liked about these first two episodes is how episode two was immediately following up right. on what happened at the end of episode one.
Right.
I just love that continuity. I wish the episode was a little bit longer than the 23, 24 minutes that we got.
It was short. It really, when it ended, I was like,
oh. It was really short. Right. But I just love that they, you know, picked it up right from where we had left off. Mm. And I thought that was really cool. I like that.
Yeah, I'm wondering why they didn't just make it one episode.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
It just felt like one episode. I don't know what this thing is with the two episodes. Maybe it'll make sense in future episodes. And they were like, we don't want to change the length later on.
Yeah, maybe it'll make sense too in terms of the demographic of who they're trying to catch with the show. Maybe there's some formatting here. So,
Are you saying it's not for me?
No, saying? I'm saying we as adults can choose to watch them back to back. But then maybe if you're, you know, if you've got a family and your
little Timmy needs to go to bedtime. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, it definitely. We're here sitting talking about Zabrax and there's some 8-year old going like, I really like the sword fight.
Right.
And that's fine. Like great. That's Star Wars is for all. And
exactly.
At the end of the day, it's more important that the 8-year old likes the sword fight than we understand the deep
lore. That's a fact.
It's not for us. We're here as tourists.
Fair. Andor is for us though. But that's what's interesting, I think, about this series is that it's straddling this interesting line. And I really like that they're taken the swing. I really like that they matured with their with the artwork. I guess even they are doing, there's a bunch of practical effects, like taking brush strokes and putting them on glass and then shooting the glass over the animation. So we get texturing and things like that. So I think that's really good. Some of the fight scenes were fantastic. I clipped a image and put it in the Discord of one of the Knight Brothers with the Gatling gun and his face lit up by the laser bolts and sort of the glee on his face as he's, you know, firing down the corridor at the police. Just absolutely stunning visuals. And the, you know, fun stuff like where the back of their vehicle drops open and they're like, hey, got a rocket launcher, haha, you know, boom. And so just a lot of fun little setups like that. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where we go with the rest of the series. John, before we go,
can I ask you one question? Can I ask you guys one question? Should we retire the lightsaber in the hallway scenes?
Ooh, no, because right, that was very
Vader. Right? Absolutely not.
How did you like it?
I thought it was cool. I had no problem with it. Now that you mention it, it says they did use it a little bit, right? Like we got two or three of them, but they're putting Maul next to Vader. Because that's how we had that scene in at the end of Rogue One where Vader shows up in the hallway and just hammers, just wrecks shop. John, you have an opinion?
You got to play the hits. You got to play the hits if you want people to keep coming to your shows.
I'm not mad at it.
Not at all. But I do think they should moderate it a little bit. So
yeah. But I think it's fine to overdo it a little bit in the first like episode or two, as long as they don't keep doing it every single episode. You just want to get people hooked on the whole like, his first just like come out there skulking and light up his dual wield saber, not dual wield, you know what I mean? Two-sided saber. Badass, right? Like just, I know I'm complaining about the lack of story, but he's aura farming, as the kids say.
So that's a fact.
And that's part of why we're here. We're here to see the dual saber. We're here to see the pretty lights and go, ooh, ah, and just watch somebody, a dark force user, wreck shop like Vader did, right? And at the height of their powers kind of thing. That is that's fun action to watch. So, all right. I think we should wrap it up here. John, anything else? Otherwise, we can thank our community for all of their support. Just a couple of quick programming notes. We're still covering The Pit. We've got two episodes left on that. Alicia and I just recorded an episode for the Riz Ahmed upcoming movie, April 10th. It's going to drop this week. Hamlet. It's a adaptation of Hamlet. It's excellent. Jean, I really want you to see it. I think you would really enjoy it.
Oh, I'm not cultured enough to see Hamlet. I'm not cultured enough to see Hamlet. No, it's fine.
It's not for you. Yeah, this is specifically reserved, not for you. You've got some One Piece coverage, John, coming up?
Yeah, we had to push it to Thursday, but we are going to be recording for the rest of... We're just doing one episode for the rest of the season because I didn't realize that it was only two arcs for the rest of the five episodes that we had left. So we're just going to cover it in one shot. And it's going to be good.
Sounds good.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
And
Hope Punk galore.
Excellent. And nice. Jean, you and I believe Luke and Alicia are doing some Daredevil.
Yes. We're doing the first three Daredevils season two on Thursday. So you should be getting that shortly.
Okay. Is it also taking a dark turn? Disney's getting real dark these last couple of shows.
It's Daredevil.
Yeah.
Daredevil's a dark character, man.
Is it more or less than the first version of Daredevil that not last season's Daredevil, but series before?
Since this is a Star Wars pod that we're doing right now, picture Kylo Ren firing at Luke. He's saying more.
Okay.
Hit me, Daddy.
That's where we're at.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'll have you know that I dared to devil some eggs this weekend.
Oh, how were they?
They were delightful. You know what, though? Okay. I have to say something. My wife convinced me to try putting pickle juice instead of lemon juice in them.
Mm.
It was different.
Okay.
They were still really good, but I'm going back to the lemon juice after this.
All right.
Fair enough.
You need an acid to cut the mayo, you know?
For the mall, stay for the deviled eggs.
That's right. Write in with your deviled eggs recipes. I want to hear them.
We will be back next week. We're going to have a bit of a rotating chair. John, it's going to be you and I, and we'll see if Jean or anyone else. Who else did we have? Was it Richard from Radioactive Ramblers?
Radioactive Richard, yeah.
Radioactive
Richard. I think he was interested... Maryland might be interested. I think we got a few takers.
Yeah, so we'll rotate it around a little bit. Speaking of Radioactive Ramblers, they are covering Invincible, and they're about to pick up coverage of The Boys. So that's exciting. Never mind the music, just dropped a really great episode on Fleetwood Mac and Grieving. And Anthony and Steve just covered Late Night with the Devil, which is a sort of Johnny Carson meets the devil movie. And next week they're covering Clue. So check out all of our affiliates. Hit the link tree in the show notes. John, you want to give a holler to our Discord server boosters?
Yes, if I can get it pulled up.
Okay.
Absolutely do that.
Why don't we switch? You do the Lore Master.
Okay.
All right. Boosters. Aaron K., Teller the Thriller, Doof71, Athena Aguilea, Lestu, Nancy M., Ghost of Partition, Radioactive Richard and Adrian, they all throw us some extra support for the community server. So we get cool things like server tags and some other flair stuff. And so thank you all for supporting the community.
And our lore masters, thank you for supporting us on Patreon or Supercast. Your dollars go a long way to doing all these silly pods and paying for David's Zoom subscription. Some margin, Michael G, Michelle E, SC, Peter OH, Nancy M, Doof71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Garrett C, Andra B, Kwang Yu, he left. Nathan T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Lestu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Kali S, Ilmariel, Rocky Zim, Jessica A, Red Zippy, the TCS, Dopamini, Catch It, Ellen R, Mrs. Tennant, AC Wilson, Eli W, Cassie K, Chimbaruni, Katia, Josh, Lou, Paynton, PDX, Corey G, Quinch, and Adrian.
Well,
thanks again, everybody.
Yeah, and thanks for hanging with us on this wacky recording. Sorry if we were a little pugnacious, but...
I'm not sorry.
You know, you should never be sorry, John. Never.
You're never sorry, John.
That's true.
John, thank you. Thank you for making it work for us tonight. And
thank you guys for having me. And again, yeah, this is fun.
We'll catch you next week.
Peace out.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback to StarWars@TheLorehounds.com and get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at Patreon or Supercast. Connect with us on Blue Sky. Links for everything in the episode show notes. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.